Well, I'm interested in finding out just not only about Carl, but the whole different other individuals that were in the labor movement and that were active in politics. And there's a whole, you know, especially around one period we're especially interested in finding out is around World War I, and when Tom Van Leer was the mayor.
Well, actually, I think I was most active in the early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Because as far as World War I was concerned, I think I was a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for a living even then, because I worked for a living from the time I was 14 years old.
Why don't you begin by telling me something about where you were born and
Well, I was born here in Minneapolis, and I had a very hard-working father who never made enough money to take care of four children. Mm-hmm. We were four. I had a very hard-working mother who scrubbed on the board and all that jazz, and but I was what my husband later on called me, an instinctive rebel. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that was me.
Yeah.
You know, I evolved slowly.
Uh-huh.
I got so I could see things. I could see what was happening to the working class.
Mm-hmm.
And how time after time, they worked so hard. When I think about it, one of the things my mother would have loved was to ever own a house, and she never owned a house. Never. And my father worked all the time. And I remember even when I was just a kid, I couldn't have been more than 12 years old. I wasn't working yet. I was still going to school. And I remember when my sister was born. She was born when I was 8 years old, and I had to go down and tell the midwife that morning about my mother was going to have a baby and she should come. And 5 o'clock in the morning, and my father had gone down to Wilcox to take care of all the horses. You know, when I got a little older, and I thought of all the extra work that man did, and didn't get a dime for it.
Mm-hmm.
He always had to go down on a Sunday morning and take care of all the horses and go back on a Sunday night and feed them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I started thinking about all these things. Now, why does one person have to work so hard just to keep a roof over the heads of his children? So
where, you said you went to work when you were 14?
Yes, I did. And I will never forget. I went to work, I was supposed to go to work at Northam and King's. That's where my mother had worked. And apparently she had worked there till she was about 25 years old. She was 25 before she married. And I remember that I got there. And I was told to go to work, and then somebody started checking me out, and they said that under the state law, I could only work 8 hours a day, and women were then working 8.5 hours a day. So I didn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home that morning, and I still remember my mother. She was in the washtub with both her hands on the board, you know, and the tears were running down her face when I told her I didn't have any job. So finally, after a couple weeks, she put me in touch with the woman who was the supervisor, well, I suppose a foreman, and I worked in the laundry then from the time I was 14 till I was 16. And then, when I was 16, I went to the telephone company. And I worked at the telephone company until I was about 18. And then Just a couple of days after the armistice was signed, we went out on strike. And I, of course, went out on strike. I hadn't been able to go to any of the meetings because of the hours I worked. I worked at divided hours, 6 to 10 at night for, about 10 to 2 and 4 to, and 6 to 10, that's what I worked.
Were you an operator?
I was an operator. And then I became a supervisor, apparently. I was, I had things they didn't expect to find in an operator, you know. So, then I was never taken back to the telephone company because I was considered an agitator because I worked out of the office of the man who was in charge of the strike. And we were out for 7 weeks. And then, by that time, I was past 16, you see, so I finally got back to work at North of Kings. There I went from the strike to North of Kings, and that's where I signed my Yellow Dog contract, promising I would never organize within the plant. And where did I go from there? I only stayed there about 6 weeks, no, about 6 months. I was in the seed department, filling these little packets of seed, you know. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take any brains. So, you know. And but I was there for about 6 months. Then I went to the Daily Star as an operator.
About what year was that? About what year was that?
That was about 1920.
That was founded as a labor paper, wasn't it?
Well, somewhere. Upstairs, yeah, that was the beginning of the Star. And that, of course, had been organized by the labor movement here. And we also had the Nonpartisan League paper upstairs, the Nonpartisan Leader, they called it. And that was upstairs in that same old building down on 5th and Portland. But it's considerably larger now than it was then. And I stayed there until I married. And I married in December 21st, 1921.
How old were you when you got married?
I was, well, I was almost 22. Uh-huh. I would have been 22 in January. Pardon. January 18th. Yeah, I would have been 22. So, I was almost 22 years old. Old enough to know better.
What did you do at the Star? What was your job?
At the Star?
Yeah.
What did I do?
Oh,
I was on a very little switchboard I was on the switchboard at the Star. We had a separate little room for that. Then, I don't know. I can't remember if I went from the Star to the Nonpartisan Leader. Then I went to the Leader, the Nonpartisan Leader, and I was on the board, and I also, I was on the little board, you know. They had just a little board. And I also handled the want ads for the Nonpartisan Leader.
Where did you meet your husband?
On the city council, I think.
How did you happen to meet him on the city council? He was a socialist city councilman, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, at that time there were 7 socialist members on the city council. And they accomplished more than the 13 men ever did, believe me. I have a picture there taken of the old council.
They had quite a few more members.
They had 26 members. There were 2 members for every ward then, instead of now they have only 1. Of course, I don't think they began to get the representation they got when they had 2.
Same wards, though, that they ended.
Because in those days, they almost always had somebody who was a Democrat or a DFLer. I myself happened to be a DFLer. I never had any time for the Democrats, and I still don't have much for them. And, but a DFL was the way you got elected in this town. So I went along.
So how did you happen to meet your husband? Were you interested in politics?
Oh, I was a delegate from the Telephone Operators Union, and he was a delegate from the Plasters. That's how I happened to meet him. It was like a council of members of the different unions.
The Trades and Labor Assembly?
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's what they called it here, too. The Minneapolis mm-hmm. Trades and Labor Assembly. Mm-hmm. And there's where we met.
Oh.
And that's, we got married shortly after.
That was, I've been reading quite a bit about it. It was a pretty, pretty radical outfit in the early 20s, wasn't it?
It was. And you see, a lot of these people on here were members of the city council, and they were the socialist members. There was Volker, and there was Erb, and there was Gislin from over northeast. And Volker, he was from over northeast. And there's Geider, he was from the same ward that Erb was from. How come? Erb licked him one time, I know. And there's Albastus. Mm-hmm. And that was Gottfried Lindstrom. Gottfried Lindstrom. And that was that Peterson. He was an old timer. And that Beneke, I think. And I think that was Pritz. And that's the guy they called Hosmer Brown. I should know a few more of these. I know that was Volker. I can't remember who these men are. But anyway, there were seven socialists in that mm-hmm. council group. And they were the guys that put things over, too, believe me.
Were they from all over the city? Or
yeah,
mostly
they were
up here?
No, they were from all over the city. Over northeast. And of course, Earl was from up here, the old 10th Ward. And Geider, you couldn't depend on him. But they had the seven socialists they could depend on. Mm-hmm. They always voted as a body, and they were organized, and they went in there organized. And they knew what they were doing, you know.
I was going to ask you about some of these people I run across and that were active in the labor movement, the socialist movement, but that I don't know too much about. Lynn Thompson, can you tell me something about him?
Yeah, he was on the school board.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember a great deal about Lynn Thompson, but I remember that he was on the school board, mm-hmm. and I remember that he was fairly liberal in his thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'd been an organizer for the Trades and Labor Assembly.
Lynn?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Dan Stevens.
See, those are just names to me.
Yeah.
I remember them, I've seen them around, but that's all.
Uh-huh.
Because at that time, I was busy raising my children.
Uh-huh.
I had four children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for quite some time, for about 10 years, I guess, I was home raising children.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I really had terrific interest in some of these things.
Uh-huh.
I was too busy.
Did you quit working after you were married?
I never worked after I was married. Well, I worked until the world found out I was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And then, but I think I worked for about 4 or 5 months after I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
About the middle of 1922.
Uh-huh.
Because I had a baby when I was married 9 months and 3 weeks. My first son, and it was all right with me. I didn't mind one bit.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought my husband wanted to find out if he could become a father, and he found out he could become a father.
Uh-huh. Not pretty quick. Huh?
So.
What do you remember about the Trades and Labor Assembly when you were a delegate?
Well, I just remember it as a group of
uh-huh.
people who got together to discuss things, and Kirk never agreed on anything, mm-hmm. you know.
A lot of debates.
So, but basically, I don't really remember anything very important about them. About any fights that were a long time ago, you know.
Sure.
I bet there weren't many women, were there?
Oh, very few women.
I suppose the phone company had...
But I don't know. You know, it never occurred to me to be ashamed of the fact that I was active, because I think I had that kind of husband too. You know, he expected me to be active, or she sure didn't expect me to sit home, because if he did, he got it very badly. Anyway, he learned about women from me.
Was he born in Minneapolis?
No, he was born and grew up in South Dakota.
Uh-huh.
But he came here when he was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. You know, when he got involved in the labor movement and the social
I sport? Think he became involved in the labor movement in 1918. That's when he was the candidate of the Socialist Party.
Uh-huh.
And he was elected.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected till 1926, and then he was defeated by that George Guider. And he went back to his plastering trade. And if you ever try to break back into the plastering trade after you've been out of it for a while, you know how very difficult it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd get a check for $60, which was a week's pay.
Mm-hmm.
Then you didn't know when you were going to get another one, because he had to pick up work where he could find it. And of course, he was a trade unionist.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have taken anything scab anyway.
Uh-huh.
So.
Did he have any problem with getting a job because he was a socialist
councilman? No, not in the plastering trade,
uh-huh.
actually. But it was difficult. Sometimes we go as much as 6 weeks without a job, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he used to carry his hod. No, not his hod. He had a great big wooden toolbox that he carried, had to carry it on his shoulder and get on a streetcar. We learned the hard way.
Uh-huh. Do you remember if Carl Skolgan was in the Trades and Labor Assembly when you were in it?
No. If he was, I don't remember any fights that made him stand out particularly.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved with the Socialist Party much, or was it mostly your husband?
No, I was not.
Uh-huh.
You see, the things I remember are mostly social.
Mm-hmm.
When I was pregnant with Timmy, my first child, I know we had dinner one time. We had a little piece of lamb. It must have been, what do they call the legs? I can't remember at the moment.
Chops?
Hmm?
Lamb chops?
No.
Oh.
Nothing so expensive as lamb chops. No, but this was a little piece of lamb. It was a little piece of lamb,
oh, lamb.
on the shanks.
Shank. Okay.
Lamb shanks. And we divided it. It was on a Sunday, and the Dunn boys came up, but Carl wasn't with them. I think Miles and Grant and what was the other one? Vince. They were up, and we just had a social afternoon, ate what we had to eat around, and just talked.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very nice time.
We were talking to Ray Dunn Jr. the other day.
Hmm?
We were talking to Ray Dunn Jr. the other day. He said he remembered that you had a cabin up.
Yeah, we had a cabin too.
What was the name?
Yeah, Carl Skolgan used to go up there too with the gang, but I was not along.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about him? What kind of person was he? So easy to get along with, or?
Well, I think I remember him because he was. He was along with Vince. I figured that he and Vincent Dunn thought pretty much alike
mm-hmm.
about what was happening to the working class
mm-hmm.
and understood the perils. And you see, Carl had come from the Teamsters Union. He'd been with the coal, what do you call it, the coal drivers? Uh-huh. Coal drivers, I think they were. And I always considered him a very well-grounded rebel. Mm-hmm. So, I knew very little about him, except he was active, and mm-hmm. I approved of the things he did.
You said you started to get active in the early 30s?
I became active in the early 30s.
What was your main area of activity?
Hmm?
What was your main area of activity then?
I think at that time it was in strike.
Uh-huh.
The driver's strike, because my husband was active in that, and then we were active in the upholster strike too,
which was
before that.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a year before. I think it was a year or two before the driver's strike.
Where did that take? What companies was that at?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
But I know we carried a banner, mm-hmm. but. I don't even know what kind of a settlement they made or anything.
Mm-hmm. What did you do during the truck driver's strike?
The only thing I did was carry a banner part
uh-huh.
of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't work in the kitchen because I had my own kitchen and my own kids to think about.
Uh-huh.
So I had to get home for that. But my husband and I were on the picket line.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go down to the headquarters when they had them in an old garage down on the south someplace. Can't remember where now.
Mm-hmm. Anything that particularly stands out about that you remember about the strike?
No, I think I was proud of the men.
Uh-huh.
Because there were so many fighters among them.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew what they were getting into. And we knew what Johannes was, what kind of a man he was. They found out.
Mm-hmm.
He sent his cops out to kill the strikers.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder where he ever ended up, do you know, Johannes?
I don't know.
He left here. He left Minnesota, finally.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wondered where he ended up. Because he made such a reputation for himself here as the head of the police department that he'd have to work in a very small town or some place that was friendly to anti-labor groups.
Uh-huh.
So.
You remember anything about the women's auxiliary of the truck drivers?
No, I don't.
Did you participate in that?
What about Clara Dunn? Have you been to see her at all? Clara Dunn? I don't know where she lives. She was Grant's wife.
Yeah. She's pretty poor health now.
Oh. I know she lost her boy. She lost Claire a while ago.
Oh, I didn't know.
But I guess Claire was never much good for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, I thought she, I know she's still alive, but Jewel Dunn, she's gone, and I think my husband was probably closer to that Dunn group than I was, too, you know. So, I think they had the attitude then, they didn't need women very much.
Any people that you could think of that we could talk to? That might have participated in some of those events?
Well, as I told you, I'm afraid I'm not much help. What about Moe Hark and some of those people?
Uh-huh.
That were close to the... They were fairly close to the driver's union.
Mm-hmm.
Moe Hark was... I think he was a driver at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still around. He was at the He was out at the memorial picnic they had in Park a couple of years ago.
Did you see the article Art Nathalin had on the TV a while ago about Olson, Floyd B. Olson?
No, I didn't see that.
I was in it.
Were you?
But they didn't use what I wanted to use. I knew they wouldn't.
Why, what was that you wanted them to use?
Well, I wanted them to use the fact that I loved Floyd Olson dearly. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact he never tried to get away from the fact that he was working class. Mm-hmm. And that his people were working class. And that his mother still had an accent. He introduced her without being ashamed of her. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to let the world know all that. They didn't use that.
He was from the north side of Minneapolis, wasn't he?
Hmm?
Floyd Olson was from the north side of Minneapolis.
Oh, sure.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, he had a mother and father lived down on 29th and Queen. Mm-hmm. So, quite some time.
When did you begin to get active? Did you in the Farmer Labor Party? Was that in the 30s or later?
Well, that must have been about in the 30s. I was active in the party for a long time. I was secretary many times of different groups that were tied in with the party, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was a time I used to do door-to-door work and punch doorbells and all those things. Mm-hmm. But I got too old for it finally. Uh-huh. I haven't got the legs for it anymore.
That's what it takes, huh? Mm-hmm. Better have the legs. When were you county commissioner?
I was county commissioner from 1960 to 70. Mm-hmm. Then the man that beat me said, "We were building a dynasty, my husband and I."
Who was that beat you?
Lindstrom. And he only lasted one term. Mm-hmm. Then he became a hotshot. He thought it was going to be easy to beat the sheriff. That showed how little he knew about the inside of politics, you know.
He was going to run against.
Your chances of beating a sheriff are practically nil.
Well,
you know.
Why is that?
Because you've got every sheriff all through the county, all working for the sheriff who's in office.
They all stick together, huh?
So anyway, he took a licking, uh-huh. Which didn't make me mad. I'm a vindictive sort of person, you know.
So he got his comeuppance, huh?
Hmm?
He got his comeuppance?
He got his comeuppance.
Mm-hmm. What stands out in your opinion about your term in there? County Commissioner, how do you evaluate that?
Well, I'm glad that I was on the county board.
Uh-huh.
I think I learned a lot from being on the other side of the table where you spend the money and where the money comes in. Mm-hmm. And where you know whether or not you got money to cover this or to cover that. And you have to be able to cover it, because if you can't, you're guilty of malfeasance in office. And you either go to jail or else you get just tossed out, and you're no good to anybody. You know, you can't accomplish anything at all. Mm-hmm. So I always figured that my 10 years I spent there were very good. And the guys used to say that I have very little education, you know, and I was perfectly willing to admit it. And they'd say they wished that people who were educated had as much common sense as I had. And I said, well, you know, I've been on the end where you have to cut your cloth as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you don't have money to cover things with, you don't have the opportunity to borrow like the fellow who's got all kinds of money behind him. Mm-hmm. He can borrow thousands of dollars and everybody makes way for him, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're working class and don't have any money, there's nobody willing to give it to you. I found that out. And I think that that's the attitude that I used when I was on the county board. I always figured how things would affect me, you know? And I thought we had a pretty good county board. We did have a pretty good county board. We did some good things while I was there. We built some buildings that I think some of the boys have had to apologize for since, but I've never felt we should apologize for them. I felt that when we built the Civic Center, that we did a good thing. We made room for the people that we had working, you know, doing the book work and that kind of thing. And I think it's a building we can be proud of. And I don't know any reason why the working people who have to come into a building like that should have to be so apologetic about spending money. The banks spend all kinds of money making the place beautiful. Mm-hmm. And everybody takes it in their stride. They expect you to have good offices when you work in a bank, but they don't expect you to have good offices when you're serving the people. Why not?
Double standard, huh? Mm-hmm. What do you remember about Dan's grandfather? He was quite a politician, too.
Yeah, he was quite a politician. He and his wife and my husband and I were good friends with the Young Dolls. For quite a long time. All I remember about him is that he sold insurance, and my husband always tried to help him out because we loved Hilva very much. And there were 9 children there, you know, to begin with. I don't remember how many of them died, but they were a big family. And Hilva was an adorable woman. She had a fine mind, better than Amos.
So you had to leave school when you went to work then, when you were 14?
Well, I never got a chance to go to high school. There was only one boy in our class that I can remember that went to high school. I think there are 2 or 3 other children. There must have been about 3 out of the class. And he ended up as a drunk out at Medicine Lake. What's the name of that place where they have a place out at Medicine Lake? Yeah. And that's where he ended up.
What schools did you go to? What elementary and junior high
school? Sheridan was the only one.
That's one of your, aren't they closing that one now?
I don't know, but it's a brand new building now. It was just an old-fashioned red schoolhouse when we went there.
Is that right?
But it was brick.
You went there starting in what? Did they have kindergarten? They didn't have kindergarten then, did they?
No. No, I went there from about 19, let's see, now wait a minute. I was 14 when I graduated. So, I was born in 1900. So I must have been about 1907 when I finally went to school.
Did they call that first grade or was it
first grade?
They did.
Mm-hmm.
You went through Sheridan all the way through, like, junior high school?
No. Oh, no. We had no junior high school then.
What did they call it?
They went from elementary school to high school.
Oh, where was the division?
Eighth
grade.
Ninth.
Oh. See, I graduated from eighth.
Uh-huh.
Which was in a play and all those things.
What do you think of all these school closings? Closing a third of Minneapolis' schools they want to do.
Well, you see, I am like Richard Green, and I've worked with him a few times on the Phyllis Wheatley House. I used to be active, and I was on the board at Phyllis Wheatley, and I kind of trust his judgment. I don't think he'd do things that would hurt the black community.
Most of the schools he's closing are right in the minority, biggest minority areas, though. Central High School, Marshall and West, and Phillips Junior High School, all those ones in the center.
So they're going to send all those people out to
all
associate with people who have more money, so they'll learn from them. I know.
What What was it that your father did? You said he were...
My father was a teamster.
Uh-huh. So those were draft horses he was working with?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What company was that?
Wilcox. They called it.
Was it a delivery outfit?
It was on Marshall Street and 8th Avenue, Northeast.
Uh-huh. And they kept their horses there?
Mm-hmm.
Times have changed, huh? Was this union at the telephone company, did that exist? Was it organized before you got there, or was that, did you organize it when you went on strike?
I have always thought that Broach, who was H.H. Broach, who came in here to organize the telephone operators, and I think the telephone workers, and I always figured that he sold out.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I can't prove that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I know that any of us who were active were never permitted in any of the buildings again.
Mm-hmm. That was when the Citizens Alliance was real strong.
Yeah, yeah, they were very strong here then. Yeah. You know, there's been such a history of the labor movement. I feel sorry that it isn't written the way it should be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just too bad.
I know, and there's a lot of material in the archives at the Historical Society, the personal papers of a number of people that were active that I've been able to go through, like Kramer and just a whole bunch of...
Have you gone through any of Bob Kramer's things?
Yeah, at the Historical Society, his personal papers are there. That's a lot of... A lot of information in there. It was quite a, like you said, the labor movement was really, really active and dynamic around the time that you first got involved in it.
Yes, it was. I think more than it is these days.
Yeah.
I always get a little sick to my stomach now if I see a so-called labor leader driving around in a Cadillac or a Lincoln, when I think of all the men that bled and died, you know, to make conditions as good as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I think of the people who had to die for it, and then now the people who are sitting on top of the world.
Mm-hmm. We've got the big salaries and the big offices.
That's right. That's right. And they don't do anything.
They don't have the stomach to fight, do they?
I forget that.
One of the things I did was go through the back issues of the Labor Review from that time, in 1918, 1920. It's really quite a different paper then, really an inspiring paper.
We used to get out a newspaper too called Scotch Herald, and let's see, when did we get that out? I've given all of that material to my youngest son. Because I understand he's going to give it to the archives,
mm-hmm.
Minnesota Archives. But we had a nice liberal little paper. Of course, we only had a circulation of about 5,000 here in North Minneapolis.
Oh, really?
That was different too, that many years ago, you know.
Uh-huh. When was this that you put that up?
I used to work on it. I sold all the advertising on it, and my husband did the writing. I can't remember what the years were.
That was a political paper?
I don't.
Pro-labor?
Yes, we used it as a political weapon, really.
Uh-huh.
And I think that a lot of the advertisers that bought from us, they recognized it as a political weapon too.
Mm-hmm. That was mostly for the North Side then.
That's all about.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we did business with the Northern States Power. We had an ad from them,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether we had one from the gas company or not. I can't remember. But talking about gas bills, do either one of you have a house?
Oh.
Mine was $130 for December, and $170 for January.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be done.
And I'm too old to have my house too cold, you know. I just can't take that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. People who are attempting to live on Social Security, and even if you have a little money saved, you know, if you get sick. For 2 years now, I've been spending money on my cancer. And cash, of course, I get help from the Medicare. But I don't know where we're going to go from here when Reagan gets through with this.
Mm-hmm. Does this remind you of another time?
Yes, it does. And it reminds me that I wonder sometime if the powers that be here in this country don't want the working people to be as poor as we were 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. When none of us owned houses, very few people had cars. And I wonder sometime if that's the plot. You're spending so much money for your telephone bill, it's more than it used to be. Your gas bill's more than it used to be. Your electricity is more. Everything's more. If they can't take it out of you one way, they're getting it another.
Yeah.
And I wonder if someday the working people are ever going to own houses again. They can't afford to buy them now.
That's right. Yeah, it looks more and more like the conditions that people were under in the 20s.
That's why I'm so amazed. I told a group today, I was out to a senior citizens luncheon before I came here, before I got back. And I told them I was amazed to see all the people who were quietly acquiescing in all of this. I never thought it would happen. I never thought that the working people, the working boys, young men, owning two cars, in a house, in a place at the lake, or a boat, would ever let go of all of this stuff without any protest. Mm-hmm. I never did. So I'm quite amazed to see it.
Well, didn't it take a while after the Depression in 1929 before people recovered from the shock and started to organize?
Well, before the Workers' Alliance group organized, that could be.
When did the Workers' Alliance group get organized? That was for the unemployed?
Well, I know that we had a Workers' Alliance group through IRS has been dead 20 years already. That must have been in the late 30s. When they had a Workers' Alliance group. They had a darn good one here. Mm-hmm. They were quite active and...
Now, I was born in 38. It was before that, wasn't it? That was going?
Yeah. It was in the 30s.
But wouldn't it have been more closer to mid-30s?
Yes, I think so. More than to the toward 40s, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Well, I think they tried to organize people mm-hmm. to protest. But I noticed the other day that Reagan said something very scornful about some of the people who were protesting out at the... wherever it was that the Republicans had this doohickey thing for Dornberg. And he was very scornful of them, as though nobody had any brains, and they were being led by the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which the fact that he thinks that it's only the commies that are objecting shows what a damn fool he is.
Yeah.
because there are a lot of people who don't have energy, who don't have energy enough to really get into a battle. Hello? Oh, hi, can I call you back? Okay, all right. My sister, she's been having a hell of a time. Here, have a piece of candy. Oh, sweeten up the
okay.
thing a little bit.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, I'm sorry. I couldn't really give you much help.
Everybody adds a little bit, you know, to the picture.
I suppose you can pick out a few things here and there that give you something new.
Well, I want to find out not just about Carl, but the period, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
what the background to it was.
Well, did Carl marry?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Although I think he had a girlfriend at the end.
As far as I know, there's no relatives of his in this country.
But Carl never married. I think he got took by some female toward the end. Come to think about it. Just on the fringes. You know, I kind of remember that.
Any kind of information we can collect, I think it's going to be of some use to somebody, some future historian. You know, working class has a real rich history in Minneapolis. You know, most of it isn't in books anymore.
You know, in 1932, just before our boy got killed, we were doing welfare work. Herb was on the city council then. Everybody was coming for jobs, and there were no jobs, a few, you know. So what he did was divide them, give them each a couple days' work, so they wouldn't really starve to death, you know. Prices were not what they are today, believe me. When I look around now, I wonder how working people, poor people, are feeding their families. Mm-hmm. In those days, we used to get rutabagas, cabbage, carrots, things like that. That's what we lived on when we were growing up. We were poor kids. Mm-hmm. My mother make a big stew, and that'd be it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when we were doing this welfare work, I was amazed with all the men. We had some men there who'd come from the railroad brotherhoods, and they were practically the aristocracy of labor, although I think that The printers were the top dog. But the railroads thought they were pretty, the railroad workers thought they were pretty much too. And we had a garage, we rented a garage. You know where the money came from? Bootleggers.
Is that right? They contributed?
They had money.
Mm-hmm.
So they put money enough to rent a garage. Floyd Olson, who was the governor then, gave us truckloads of fish when they, in spring, quite early in the spring, I think, when they were taking the rough fish out of the lakes,
uh-huh.
we'd get the rough fish. And all those beautiful men cleaned all of those in our backyard. I don't know whatever happened to all the stuff.
Must have had a good garden there the next year.
I imagine so. I can't remember. Anyway, but they cleaned all these fish and salted them down in barrels. Mm-hmm. Someplace we got barrels and we had them all salted down. And we had rabbits. They put on rabbit drives for us. At that time they had huge numbers of rabbits up around Lake Mille Lacs and places. And the game wardens up there were giving us some help. they were going to put on a drive for rabbits for the Christmas baskets, because we used to get meat and we used to get bread, things like that, from all the bakeries all around here. And somebody always donated a little bit of gas to put in the little pickups. All the guys almost always had pickups. And that's how they'd go around and pick all this stuff up on Saturday night. But I don't want to talk anymore. But that's how we lost our son. In a group, Irv and a couple other guys. A bootlegger had promised he'd go up and take shells. We got shells for nothing from Federal Cartridge. And they couldn't go. For some reason, oh, he came just after Irv and the gang pulled out. And it was too late. And Irv had one of our boys with him. And when they came back that night, they had an accident. They met another car head on. And the boy was killed. And Irv spent 4 months in bed. And that was the end of our welfare project. So, and the doctor that looked over Irv's x-rays told me he'd never walk again. He had his pelvis broken in two places. I said, then he'll go out a window someday, because he's not the kind of a man that will ever sit in a wheelchair all his life. And I said, I never told, not even my mother, not even my own mother, I never told a soul. I never walked again.
So much for doctors, huh?
Yeah. But I didn't even tell her about till about 10 years after it happened. And I told her. She said, you never knew, did you, that the doctor said you weren't going to walk again. I said, I wouldn't even tell Ma, because I thought somehow it would get back to him, you know. Mm-hmm. Trickle here, trickle here. Mm-hmm. So, never did. And he walked, which I thought was pretty good. I think sometime maybe it was the deuced hard bed we put him into. The doctor had said, put a frame in the bed. I didn't know a frame from a hole in the ground, you know. And I had a carpenter come over, Henry Wrench. Your grandfather would have remembered him. And I said, Henry, they tell me to put a frame in this bed, then I can bring her home. Well, he said, I never made a frame, but I'll make a frame and we'll put the mattress over it. So that's what we did. We put a frame in the bed, made of wood, and then the mattress over it, so Irv was just laying practically flat. You know, I think sometimes that's the thing that saved his pelvis. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It was so hard he wanted to get out of bed.
Huh?
Maybe it was so hard he just wanted just to get out of bed, he decided.
Well, I used to get crying spells. And he was, one time he said, I want you to go downtown for the day, he said, or for a while. It'd be good for you. I had a girl here then. And not here. We live at 3251 Thomas then. So I went down, and when I came back, he said, you'll never have to bring me the bedpan again. That was one of the things that irritated him so terribly, because I had to take so much care of him, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, I hitched myself to the bathroom today. There was a kitchen chair alongside of his bed, and he had hitched himself down the hall from the bedroom. The bedroom was in the front of the house, and then he hitched like this, and there was the bathroom. So from then on, he wouldn't have anybody help him. He got to the bathroom. Then another day, several days later, several weeks later, he said, you better go downtown. So I did. And but I think I went to a show or something. And when I came home, he said, he was sitting down in the living room on the Davenport. I said, my God, how did you get down those stairs? Because we had stairs there too. He said, I came down on the crutches. Because he'd asked for the crutches a long time before that. And I said, all right, when you get ready to use crutches, we'll have crutches here for you. And when I came home, that's what he had done. I nearly had a hemorrhage. You know, I thought, what if he fell and break something again, you know, on the way down? But apparently he didn't. Then after that, he graduated to one crutch and a cane. Then after that, he graduated to two canes. Then he went to a cane. And then he didn't have anything, and he walked all by himself. 4 months, and he was back in the city council.
Yeah, you could do a lot if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it's up here.
Yeah. Well, look how long he lived after that. He lived that way. He was 32. No, he was 42 then. Yeah, 42. But he was 42 then. He lived to be 70. To 70, almost 70. So he would have had a heck of a long time in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Hard to take.
Well, I don't know if I helped you very much.
Sure. Like I said, everybody adds another little piece to the picture, you know?